This program may not represent the views of Bonneville International Corporation or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions from this broadcast are solely those of the individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Derek walks you through how to win government jobs and contracts, effectively manage your government career, and best utilize government services. Every week on Fed Access, you will learn about interesting federal agencies, workers, and jobs. Fed Access provides you the access you need to succeed in the federal government. And now your host, Derek T. Dorch.
Welcome to Fed Access. On today's show, we'll be talking about a little-known federal agency with a big mission. It's NOAA Corps, the Commissioned Corps of the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. I'll be talking to Lieutenant Commander Holly Jablonski, Chief of the NOAA Corps' Officer Recruiting Branch, about NOAA Corps, its mission, and about careers as a commissioned officer. Following this interview, you'll hear my second and final part of my interview with Ellen Hirsch, Director of the National Technical Information Service. Holly, welcome to Fed Access. I really appreciate you coming on out today.
Thank you.
Let's talk about NOAA Corps,
okay.
The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, the Corps. What do you guys do? I mean, tell me a little bit about, because you guys are like a commission, almost like a commission corps, right?
We are officers. Commissioned officers, yes. Okay. We don't have any enlisted in our service, but we're the smallest of the uniformed services. We have approximately 300 officers right now.
Okay.
We're authorized for 321. We all have science backgrounds, science or engineering, and we start out by serving 3 years aboard one of NOAA's science or research ships. From there, we rotate ashore and afloat, doing 2 to 3 years, 2 to 3 year tours on each ship or a land assignment. We serve in various positions throughout NOAA, all of NOAA's line offices. And what we bring to those offices when we're ashore is our operational expertise. We're all trained for leadership. We have the science backgrounds, and it allows us to bring the operational side and have that kind of input to all of NOAA's programs.
Right. Talk to me a little bit about the history before we kind of go into, because you just mentioned a lot of different pieces. Talk to me a little bit about the history of the NOAA Corps.
The NOAA Corps traces its roots back to Thomas Jefferson when he was president, his survey of the coast. And that started with the U.S. Coast and Geodetic Survey. And that was a group of Army and Navy officers and civilians. And their job was to go out and obviously survey the coast and perform triangulation, that type of thing. And then over the years, they eventually became a commissioned service.
Okay.
And it all, as other science organizations joined, that's how they ultimately became NOAA.
So okay.
I kind of consider NOAA a science catch-all.
Okay.
And we have several different line offices.
Right.
We deal in fisheries and oceanographic research and surveying. I mean, there's so many things that NOAA is involved in.
Okay.
So.
Now, as part of, would you guys consider yourself a part, you said it's one of the smallest branches of the
military? We're the smallest of the uniformed services. We're under Department of Commerce.
Okay. All right. Now, with all of that, I mean, because you have on your uniform right now, which is similar to a Navy uniform almost, not to take away from you guys and get a Navy any props, but I mean, with all of that, do you actually serve? Is there any on a time and where you're actually serving with the military on any kind of operations or during time of war, is there anything where you guys are called up to provide any kind of assistance?
We can be transferred by the president in times of war or national emergency. It hasn't happened in some time, but in history there have been NOAA Corps officers that have gone over to the Navy or to the Army and provided generally something in our expertise, which is surveying, at least back then it was. So that we can be transferred. And that's something I try to make sure all our applicants know. There is the possibility. It does exist,
okay.
Yes.
All right. Even though
we're not
happened.
Weapons trained. So that's where are the biggest difference between us and the military services.
Right. But everything else in terms of running a ship or that
we all know how to drive ships.
Is that
yes.
All right. Well, with that, let's talk about the Corps and because you guys have the both the ships and the air. I mean, some of you guys are pilots and everybody drives ships. Talk to me about the ship piece of it first. I mean, what are the different ships? And we have about how many? 30-something ships?
We have about 17.
17? Okay.
I think it's 17.
And so what are the ships doing out when they're out at sea, and how long do they stay out?
The ships have various missions. Right now, the majority of our fleet does fisheries research. And they're primarily checking stock populations. They make the fisheries regulations based on these studies. We also have hydrographic survey vessels, which go out, they measure water depth, they look for hazards to navigation, and then that data is used to update the nautical charts. So all of our commercial goods that are coming in, the ships come in with inches under them sometimes, so the charts are very critical with today's shipping.
We have to make sure they don't hit any bridges or anything like that.
Or any rocks.
Any rocks, right. Yeah,
right, and right. And with the bigger ships, I mean, it's more than just economic impact of losing the goods. I mean, there's environmental issues if they, you know.
Oil spillage.
Exactly. There's loss of life. I mean, there's a lot of possible, you know, potential disaster involved with running aground. We also have oceanographic and atmospheric research vessels, and they service meteorological buoys on the equator. They study different properties of the ocean. They do what's called a CTD cast, conductivity, temperature, and depth. And it just takes the properties, records the properties of the ocean. So there's a lot of different scientific work that goes on them. So we have a couple that are what I would consider multi-mission, and they dabble. It depends on you know, what project is in their area.
Okay.
And then we actually have one ocean exploration ship that's just about ready to come online. They're still doing shakedowns on that.
So this will almost be like a deep water where it's going out into the deep ocean and maybe doing some diving and exploring.
Yeah, I think they have a submersible.
Okay.
So I'm not sure exactly what their projects are just yet, but I know they do have a submersible.
Okay. Well, with all of that, I mean, you know, and when you guys go out at sea, you know, what's you're going on this research project, but are you out there for like 6 months? Is it out there for 8 months or 3 months? What's the timetable that you're out on a designated time?
Okay. The NOAA ships generally have an endurance of about 2 weeks to, say, 2 months.
Okay.
So they have to come into a port, obviously, to reprovision at that point. Our field seasons, a good average would be that they run about 9 months, and there's usually about 3 months throughout the year that they're alongside for repairs.
Okay. Now, on a ship, you have your commissioned officers, and then you have what I think NOAA hires like different crew people, right?
Yes.
To serve the ships. Talk to me about the day-to-day. And I think you've had some tours on some ships as well.
I have. I've been aboard two ships, and then I had a small boat that I was in charge of. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
We don't have enlisted, which I mentioned earlier. What we have is the commissioned officers. And they make up the majority of the deck officers.
Okay.
We do have a handful of civilian mates in our ranks as well. Generally, they're people that have kind of, they call it come up through the hawse pipe.
Right.
And then the remainder of the crew on the ship is all civilian wage mariners. So depending on the position they hold, they would have a Coast Guard license. Our engineers are Coast Guard licensed. Our ABs are able seamen.
Okay.
They're Coast Guard licensed. But the stewards, the deck department, the engine department, survey department, electronics technicians, they're all civilians.
Okay. Now, with that, there's a lot of hiring, I mean, in the NOAA Corps or NOAA as a whole in terms of the wage seamen or anyone else serving on these ships. Is there a lot of hiring in this? Because, I mean, because you are going out on sea, is it kind of hard on somebody's life? And so, therefore, the turnover is high. So, therefore, you always need to replenish your ranks?
There's a fair amount of turnover, and it is a hard lifestyle, you know, The benefit of the officers, we get to rotate on and off the ships.
Right.
So a wage mariner, I mean, that's their job.
Their
they stay on the ships,
sure.
Yes. And there is a fair amount of burnout. We are trying to adjust our rotational schedule and find a way to increase retention and increase the quality of their family life. So that's something that we've been studying.
Okay. Now, with you guys, in terms of the application process, if someone said, I'm interested in becoming an officer with NOAA Corps, how do they go through the process? What are you looking for in terms of either educational background or their training or anything else? What are you looking for, and what kind of process do they go through? Like a boot camp they have to go through? What's the process in becoming an officer?
Okay, well, we don't have boot camp.
Right.
I get that question a lot.
I'm sure.
You have to be a United States citizen.
Okay.
You have to have a four-year degree from an accredited college or university in science or engineering background, something that relates to NOAA's technical or mission, technical or
scientific mission.
Thank you. You have to be able to see color. That's another requirement. Obviously, if you're operating ships, you need to be able to see the buoys, that type of thing. If you meet those requirements, you can either send me an email. On our website, there's email, there's phone numbers. They're pretty much all directed to me.
Right.
So
no,
you contact
what,
me.
Contact Holly, right?
There's a personal data resume form that we have, okay, and a lot of people will just fill that out and send it in. And that's kind of a screening tool to make sure you meet the minimum requirements.
Do you have your degree? A good number of applicants each year? Or, I mean, what's the number of people who are applying for the program or that know about it who are applying?
Well, we just closed the application for the upcoming basic officer training class, and I have about 60 applicants,
okay,
and we're going to select 17.
Okay.
So we try,
so
and
it's pretty competitive.
It is.
Okay.
It
okay.
Is.
Now, through that process, I mean, what are you looking for? And since I got you're part of the selection process, I mean, what are you looking for to kind of out of that applicant, out of those 60? How do you kind of weed those people down and say these are my 17?
Okay. Well, they're selected by an officer personnel board, so
okay,
you have at least 5 senior officers that go through the applications, and obviously, senior officers are all going to have different ideas of which qualities they think are the most important. But I mean, the things we look for is, do they meet the educational background? If they don't...
Let me touch on that real quick. Mm-hmm. Education. I mean, what are you looking for? I mean, degrees in science?
Well, they have to have a bachelor's degree.
Okay.
That they have to have. We'd like to see 48 semester hours of science relating to NOAA's missions.
Okay.
So, again, that's kind of a broad...
Now, do they need to have a certain kind of, do they need to have a B or a certain kind of average out of those classes that they've taken scientific courses? Do they need to, you know, have a good command of it where you're making A's and B's in those courses?
Well, that's true with any job, isn't
all right,
it?
Well, that's true. Right? Well,
that's
we
true
hope
job.
So, but.
So, but we do also look at, you know, did they work through school?
Okay.
I mean, if the grades are not the best, then there should be some reason why.
Gotcha.
Not that they just didn't feel like doing their work.
Right,
it should
right,
be, you know,
right.
Well, I was working 3 jobs to pay.
Understood.
To get paid through
so you
for
take
my
all
school.
That into consideration.
We take all that into consideration. We look at their job experience. We look at how motivated they are. There's a personal interview involved. You know, why do they want to be an officer? You know, are they interested in serving their country, or are they just interested in getting a job? I mean, that makes a big difference.
Right. Now, with that whole process, I mean, the 17. Well, I mean, will you go through all 60 and interview every single person, or will you just interview the top tier candidates, you think?
No, the interview is actually part of the initial application package.
Okay.
I don't do all the interviews. I do local ones.
Okay.
We try to find an officer that's closest to the applicant.
Okay.
And generally someone, lieutenant commander, senior lieutenant commander of that rank.
Okay.
We'll do a personal interview and then do an evaluation and send that to me.
Okay. So once that interview is done, I mean, after you go through the interview process, what's next in the selection process?
Then they have to wait.
Okay. How long is that?
The application deadline's about 3 months before the start of a basic officer training class.
Okay.
So we just closed this application a week or two ago, and the board's going to meet actually tomorrow. And I hope to have notifications out within a week after that. So the board makes recommendations to the Admiral, and the Admiral has to approve them.
Okay. So a whole process in terms of actually a person applying all the way till they get their notification that you may have been accepted to go to officer mm-hmm. training class is about a 3-month process, you're saying?
It would probably be from applying to the time they would actually go, if they were selected,
sure,
would be, I would say, about 6 months.
Okay. We have to take a break, but when we return, we'll be talking more about NOAA Corps with Lieutenant Commander Holly D. Jablonski, Chief of the NOAA Corps Officer Recruiting Branch. You're listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Deutsch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
I'm Howard Lewis, one of 10 million Americans who is blind or has a significant disability. I'm a records manager, environmental technician, or warehouse manager.
Nearly 70% of Americans with disabilities do not have jobs. No matter the economic climate, there's little change in this staggering unemployment rate. The Ability One program works to lower that number by creating jobs for people who are blind or have significant disabilities, and we're doing it without federal tax subsidies. Ability One. Find out more at AbilityOne.org.
This week's half-price DC offer was Golfdom, Washington's premier golf store. Carrying the highest-end golf-inspired products and equipment, Golfdom truly allows you to live the game.
Golfdom's end-of-season clearance sale starts this weekend. Grab items up to 70% off, even golf ball dozens starting at $750.
Perfect for any level golfer, Golfdom has reduced-price Callaway iron sets, Sun Mountain Superlight bags, discounted Nike drivers, and more. The sale starts October 1st. Come in this weekend for the best selection.
Head over to halfpricedc.com for other great half-price offers.
Have you delayed putting together an estate plan? Your retirement savings, insurance policies, and real estate are all part of your assets. If you or your partner should ever become incapacitated, who will handle the financial or medical decisions? And how do you want those assets distributed? Hi, I'm Wayne Zell of Zell Law and host of Blueprint for Wealth Saturdays at 10 a.m. Find out how you can better secure your future this Saturday or call me at Zell Law at 571-203-9355. or visit us on the web at zelllaw.com.
This audio puzzle is brought to you by Quest Government Services. Identify the federal agency problem.
Hi, may I take your order this evening? Ow.
If you said server down, you are correct. Quest Security Solutions can help you keep your agency network up and running. And by developing extensive continuity plans, we can keep your data secure. To learn more about Quest Security Solutions, visit quest.com/federal. That's quest.com/federal.
And now Ask the CIO, brought to you by Vion Corporation.
Roger Baker is VA's Assistant Secretary for Information and Technology and Chief Information Officer. He says stopping 45 projects did more than just fix the agency's approach to technology.
Probably the biggest culture change inside of VA has been the IT organization working extremely cooperatively with its customers in the Health Administration, the Benefits Administration, and jointly to make these programs a success.
CIOs and IT directors, are you paying for capacity services that you're not using? Take a good look at your capacity services contract, and next time, make sure you're not signing just another lease. Ask the experts. Vion Corporation. You can create a plan so that you only pay for what you use. When your job is on the line with data storage decisions, that's the way to go. With a 30-year partnership, Vion and Hitachi Data Systems have been bringing you innovative technologies with integrity and quality service. Visit Vion.com to learn more. That's Vion.com.
Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. If you just joined us, I'm talking to Lieutenant Commander Holly Jablonski, Chief of NOAA Corps' Officer Recruiting Branch, about NOAA Corps, its mission, and about careers as a commissioned officer with the Corps.
Once you get through the interviews and once you kind of the selection is made, the top people are made, then you go to officer training class. Mm-hmm. What does that involve when you go to officer training, and where is that?
The officer training is at the Merchant Marine Academy up in Kings Point, New York. And it's a four-month program, and they cover some leadership training and some NOAA-specific administration in processing, that type of thing. The majority of it is maritime-related, marine science, navigation, radar, firefighting, basic safety, that type of thing, since all new officers start as junior officers aboard one of our surveyor research ships. So we're preparing them to report to this shipboard assignment.
Okay, okay. So during the 4 months, you're actually getting the classroom and practical application training of actually being on a ship.
Yes, they get out on the small boats at Kings Point. They get underway on the Kings Pointer, their training ship, which works great for us because the Kings Pointer is of the same class as several of our research ships.
Okay.
So it's very practical experience for the ones that report then to those ships.
Okay. And that class is what? How many people are you holding? I mean, I know that's maybe technical for a lot of people hearing that, but what class weight is that a person's going to be on? What kind of ship? What kind of size, I should say?
I would say an average would be about 230 feet. We're much smaller than the Navy ships.
Okay, okay. Yeah. I was trying to give some people some perspective about what kind of ship
we're much smaller, but we do a lot of piloting. You know, we're in and out of port and that type of thing. And it's not the same as being on a commercial vessel where you're going from A to B across the ocean, and then the pilots come on board and take you into the harbor. We take the ships
in. Vessels.
Yes.
Okay. Good. Yeah. Now, through that whole process, after the 4 months, then you're actually assigned to an actual vessel somewhere, and then you're kind of just doing on-the-job training on that vessel.
Yes. The JO, their junior officer, their primary duties are to learn their vessel, learn to safely navigate the vessel. They have a workbook that they have to do, and then they have to essentially gain the trust of their commanding officer to be able to stand a navigational watch on their own.
Okay.
They do normal watch rotations of 4 hours on watch, 8 hours off, and then 4 hours on watch, 8 hours off again. I always tell them one of the eight-hour period is for showering and sleeping, and the other 8 hours for collateral duties.
Okay. So
which is probably much like the military. Sure, yes, it's very rigorous.
Okay. And then during that process, I mean, are you the one actually doing actual research, or are you working with civilian scientists who are doing research aboard your vessel? Mm-hmm. I should say. You know, what's going on as the vessel's about?
Okay, that changes a little bit with which vessel you're on. Primarily, when an officer is aboard a ship, they are supporting NOAA's civilian scientists. So for like the fisheries vessels, the ship comes into port, they pick up a group of NOAA civilian scientists that have their specific project, specific data requirements that they have to meet, and they'll take them out on the cruise, and they'll have their project instructions and make sure that they get them to the sites they need to be at and get the nets deployed, and they do all this safely. Okay. And safety is obviously the biggest concern.
Sure.
On our hydrographic survey vessels, it's a little bit different. There, the junior officers work hand-in-hand with civilian survey techs, and they're actually, in addition to learning to safely operate the vessel, they're learning to operate sonar and process and analyze survey data and report hazards to navigation. They do final reporting on their data that before it gets applied to the nautical charts.
It's
a mix.
Okay. Walk me through, you know, we just kind of went through the whole process of you getting in. Walk me through the kind of career path. You become a junior officer. Mm-hmm. And, you know, from that point, if you decide to make a career out of being in NOAA Corps, what happens from there? Where can you go? How can you go about your career? And how high can you get?
Well, how high you can get, we have two admirals. We have a one-star and a two-star admiral. So that's probably as high as you can get.
Right.
An officer's career, you start with an initial three-year assignment to one of the vessels. After that, you report to a shore billet, shore assignment for 3 years, and then the NOAA officer rotates back and forth between assignments ashore and afloat. So you would have the three-year initial assignment to the ship, 3 years on shore, then 2 years at sea. So it goes down to 2 years at sea after that, and you go back and forth, back on shore, 3 years on shore, 2 years at sea.
Okay.
When you're on the ship, your first tour, you would start as a junior officer.
Before you go into that, let me touch on something. You said the 2 years at sea and then 3 years ashore.
Mm-hmm.
With that, can you pick your duty assignment? Can you say, well, I want to live in the West Coast, or I want to live in the East Coast, or I want to, you know, work in this office? Mm-hmm. I mean, how does that work out in terms of, or is it more on demand of the agency?
Well, you can provide your top three choices to the assignment officer. You can send a memo to the assignment officer. They do consider that. But obviously we're commissioned officers. The needs of the service are always one of our top priorities. So do you always get one of your preferred assignments? No. And there's more to it than just saying, I want this assignment. You have to make sure you're qualified for the assignment. You know, it doesn't hurt to contact the person that's in the assignment and explain to them that you're interested in going there after them. And, you know, this is what you think you can bring to the assignment. And so there's a little bit of lobbying as well. It's as much as that office wanting you to come there as it is you wanting to go there. But again, there's no guarantees.
That's part of
the service. That's what we sign up for.
Sure. Let me ask this, because I know sometimes in the academies, when a person goes to academy, like the top, you know, when you graduate, the top person who graduates or so, they can pick their assignment. Is that possible, or is it really about the need of the actual service?
I'm not quite following.
Well, yeah. Well, you know, I know when I was in Marines in boot camp, the person who graduated at the top of their list.
Oh, they had
to
pick.
You could, you know, say, I want a duty assignment here.
Okay.
And they may get the preferential pick because they were the top graduate of their class.
Right.
So is that the case also with your classes as you're coming out of officer training class?
I don't know that I could actually say that specifically. Again,
sure.
I mean, our fleet is small.
Okay.
And sometimes it comes down to birthing. Do they have a bunk for a female or a male?
Gosh.
You know, and sometimes it comes down to that. What I tell new applicants is, when you submit your request, if you have a class of 20 and all of you request the same three ships, there's going to be a lot of disappointment.
Right.
So you kind of need to find out.
For it.
Well, or request something that no one else is asking for, which is how I got my first assignment.
Okay.
But I wanted that assignment.
Okay.
But I knew that no one else had requested it. So, you know,
what was that first assignment? What was that first
assignment? It was the NOAA ship Whiting, which is now decommissioned. They've decommissioned every ship I've been on, so I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. But and it's a hydrographic survey ship that worked on the East Coast. They happened to be working in Delaware Bay, which was an area that I had grown up with on small boats.
Okay.
So
you knew the area well.
Not as well as I do now.
Yeah, sure. And then with that assignment, I mean, where you were the junior officer and that's where you kind of got your initial training on everything. What were you doing? You were actually kind of, you know, providing support for doing what?
I know. I was actually doing the hydrographic surveys.
Oh, okay.
So I was out there learning to drive the ship and learning to operate side scan sonar and shallow water multi-beam sonar. And we were analyzing data, finding hazards to navigation, reporting those out. Verifying positions of shoreline features and piers and verifying aids to navigation and
Okay. With the breakdown in terms of male female, I mean, you know, what's the out of the 300 so officers you have, what's the breakdown? Even with that, let's even go into the question of diversity. I mean, are you looking to expand? Are you doing more initiatives as recruiting just more of a diverse candidate pool, male, female, people with languages or people other races? I mean, how does that work with the NOAA Corps?
Well, you know, any government agency, we're always looking for diversity.
Sure.
The last figure that I saw, I think, said we had about 25% that were female, and that's our biggest diversity that we have as far as outreach for other groups. I am trying different things. We've tried publications and haven't had a lot of success there. Sure. I'm putting together an online package with I probably shouldn't say who, but
yeah, sure,
I'm trying some diversity outreach through the internet rather than the publications. It seems that the generation coming up, they all want to do everything online anyway.
Online.
So
sure.
I'm trying to meet that. I'm kind of old school.
Or something
exactly.
Like that,
well,
right,
we do have a Facebook page.
Okay.
I'm trying to get out of my old ways and
sure.
and meet them somewhere else.
Get a blog or something like that. We're going to see Holly on the blog at some point. No, but with all of that, I mean, what you're saying is that you're definitely interested in kind of recruiting and maybe expanding and going into other groups to say, listen, NOAA Corps is
absolutely.
Here. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, definitely.
We have to take a break, but when we return, we'll be talking more about the NOAA Corps with Lieutenant Commander Holly D. Jablonski, Chief of the NOAA Corps Officer Recruiting Branch. You're listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
The Federal Drive is every weekday from 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Hear interviews, news, perspective, and analysis from Tom Temin and Amy Morris. The Federal Drive team will help give you the important information you need about the federal government and how it impacts your organization or agency. Tune in 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. or go to federalnewsradio.com. The Federal Drive is sponsored by CDWG. The right technology, right away.
Attention AFGE members, did you know you have free access to all federal government job listings at your fingertips? Through AFGE's partnership with AVIEW Technologies, you can view all available jobs, apply online, and be notified when a position of interest to you becomes available. View your application progress online 24/7. You'll even get information to make you a better job applicant. Simplify your next career move with AVIEW Technologies. Log on today and check out current job openings at avuecentral.com. That's avuecentral.com.
Questions about green IT strategies? Need one-on-one information on the smart grid, electric vehicles, or greenhouse gas reporting? Join hundreds of federal employees as they learn from the foremost sustainability experts at the first GreenGov Symposium, hosted by the White House Council on Environmental Quality and the George Washington University from October 5th through the 7th, 2010, at GW's Foggy Bottom campus. Go to gwu.edu/greengov for more information.
What will the Fed VIPs be talking about at FedTalks 2010? Go to FedTalks.com to get the scoop. FedScoop will be hosting D.C.'s biggest VIP gathering of the year on Tuesday, October 12th. It's a new fiscal year for the Feds, so come hear about key initiatives and priorities from top federal agency CIOs and CTOs, network with your key prospects, clients, and partners, meet Arianna Huffington, rock out with the DJ to the White House, and enjoy performances from the Arlington rap comedian Go Remy. Go to FedTalks.com to save your spot today.
Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you just joined us, I'm talking to Lieutenant Commander Holly Jablonski, Chief of NOAA Corps' Officer Recruiting Branch, about NOAA Corps, its mission, and about careers as a commissioned officer with the Corps.
What does the air component do of NOAA?
Well, there's a handful of officers that are pilots. The majority of us are mariners.
Okay.
After an initial sea assignment, then a junior officer can apply for the aviation program.
Okay.
They're very competitive. They take approximately...
Will NOAA Corps train you to be a pilot?
Yes, they will.
Okay.
It's very competitive. They take approximately 2 officers per year into the aviation program. Once in there, the most well-known mission that the pilots have is the Hurricane Hunters.
Okay.
That everyone knows what the Hurricane Hunters do.
Sure.
We also have smaller planes that do remote sensing. They do snow survey to predict flooding. They do aerial photography, shoreline... that type of thing for our charting efforts.
Okay. Are you dealing mostly with planes, or you also have helicopter pilots as well, or you have a mix?
We used to have helicopter pilots, but we don't have any helicopters anymore.
Okay.
We've discontinued that.
Okay. Well, now with that, so, I mean, and how many airplanes do you have with NOAA Corps?
I think we have around 11.
Around 11?
I think it's around 11 now.
Okay. And with that, I mean, do many of your pilots, since it is so competitive, most of them stay in within that rank for a long period of time?
Within the Corps?
I mean, do they stay as a pilot for a long time, or do they come off it and go back into it? I mean, is the rotation the same and where you're
No, their rotation is a little bit different. I believe the aviation side, they usually go about 5 years.
Okay.
And then they would rotate. They still rotate, but when they're actually flying, because they have the training and then they have to go fly.
Okay.
So,
okay.
You know, when you add the training into it, I think it ends up being about a 5 year shot.
Okay. Going from that aspect right there with the actual NOAA Corps, in terms of what you've done and providing maybe support, I mean, what's your working with other agencies? I mean, whether it be a Coast Guard or whoever, whether it be a moment of disaster, I mean, are you ever providing any kind of support when it comes to those kind of situations where maybe like Katrina or some kind of like a, you know, hurricane somewhere on the coast?
Yep.
What's the role of NOAA Corps during that time period?
We have responded to several incidents like that. You mentioned Katrina. We have what are called navigational response teams, and they're small trailerable boats that do hydrographic survey work.
Okay.
So after an incident like a hurricane, particularly down, you know, in a port area like in Louisiana,
right,
the ships can't get in with supplies, or they don't know how they can get in safely. So I believe we had every navigation response team we have, I think we had seven at the time, all responded down to Katrina. And what they did is they did a quick survey of the port to make sure that they could get supplies into those people.
Okay.
So you
mapped out, your teams mapped out the
areas
in which people
could take in. And sometimes it's a twist, you know, it's a curvy, you know, route they have to take in there. But, right, you know, if they can get in there safely, then we can get supplies to those people.
Right.
Some of the other items that we've been involved in are searches for planes. When I first reported to the Whiting, actually, we got deployed to Egypt Air 990. And what we did is we found the wreckage for that.
Okay.
And we don't do recovery efforts.
Okay.
But, I mean, we look for things on the bottom every day. That's what we do. We're good at it.
Sure.
So that was...
I think I heard that weren't you guys involved when John F. Kennedy's plane
went
down? John F. Kennedy Jr.'s plane went down?
That was the NOAA ship Rudy.
Okay.
That was my second assignment.
I wasn't
there for that. I was there for Egypt Air.
Okay. So you guys will respond to any of that. What about the Hudson, the recent Hudson,
I think they knew
Miracle on the Hudson?
I think they knew where that was.
Okay. You were close by. Somewhere, right?
So I don't know if Noah was involved with that or not.
Okay.
But I mean, the Egypt Air, and it's when they can't find it. I mean, that's hydrographic survey. That's
sure.
What we
do. When anything is under the water, you guys are the ones who go down there. Are each one of you dive trained as well?
We do have a dive program.
Okay.
It's called the NOAA Working Diver Program. And that's a collateral duty. There's one officer billet that's actually directly at the dive program.
Okay.
But there's several officers. There's civilians. Our civilian wage mariners also might go through the program.
Okay.
And become divers. And a lot of what the divers do is ship husbandry. They're cutting lines out of propellers, or you know, they're checking on transducers and that type of thing.
Right.
I've done dives to verify items we found on the bottom to see what they are. If you get a smudge on your sonar, you can't really tell what it is.
Right.
We go investigate it.
Okay. So you send the dive team down and make sure everything is okay, or report back and then report it.
And see what the item is. See if it's a hazard.
Okay.
We have equipment that we can take with us that'll give us at least depth on an item if it's for a survey.
And the information that you guys collect in terms of whether it be the surveys, this information is put out to in the different publications that people use who are traveling along any kind of seaport or any kind of base. Is that right?
The navigational charts.
Yeah.
Are produced by NOAA.
Okay.
So our data goes directly to them. There's actually three primary agencies that provide data for our nautical charts, and it's the Corps of Engineers and the Coast Guard, and then the majority of the data, the shoreline and the soundings and the wrecks, rocks, obstructions, that comes from our teams or we do have some contract. Surveys.
Do you guys do anything international? I mean, are you working with any international agencies or maybe the equivalent of NOAA, NOAA Corps from another country in terms of doing surveying or working with them on any kind of special program?
Just what I know of personally, we have worked with the Mexican Navy as far as surveying. They actually, the NOAA ship Whiting was decommissioned and now has been transferred to the Mexican Navy. So she surveys on as the Mexican Navy ship Rio Tuxpan.
Okay.
But so we've done some work with them. We did a officer exchange with, I think, the British Navy.
Okay.
But I mean, I'm sure we do other things that are international. I just haven't personally been involved with.
Definitely. In terms of just, because you've, lived the life, on the day-to-day life of a ship, if someone was part of the NOAA Corps and from your experiences, what's just that day-to-day life while you're out there and you're doing the surveys? I mean, what could a person expect if they decide to join? Is it a life of adventure? Is it a life of, just constantly monotony? I mean, what would you say the day-to-day? Day is?
Well,
how would you describe it?
It can be monotonous at times. You're very busy. Obviously, four on, eight off, four on, eight off. Right. You kind of get into a routine. So there's a bit of routine there. As far as hydrographic survey, which is what I've done, it can be very monotonous. We go out, we cover everything. We go back and forth. We call it mowing the lawn.
Okay.
So you're covering the entire bottom
Just
of the ocean, going back and forth,
sure.
seeing what's there. But then there's, it's interspaced with moments of extreme excitement when you find that uncharted wreck.
Okay.
So that there's adventure there. There's small boat operations. That's a lot of fun. Sometimes you get out and you're surveying on the small boats.
Right.
Sometimes you have to go to shore and install tide gauges. And again, this is my experience, which is in the hydrographic survey area. On the fisheries ships, sometimes you get some pretty interesting catches, so that can be pretty exciting.
Okay, you may find some unique things at the bottom of the ocean somewhere, right? With that, in terms of if a person did join, living conditions, if you're on a ship, do you have your own quarters, or how does that work? As you're being an officer, are you bunking with somebody? Is what they see on maybe the movies or whatever, where they have two people with a bunk? How does that work out?
It kind of depends on the ship. Some of our larger ships, an officer might have a single room. Sometimes you'll have two officers to a room. The ones that I've been on, we've always had a roommate. The ship that I just got off of, which was the No Ship Rudy, actually was one of our smallest ships. And we had two people to a room and two people on the other side of the ship in a similar room. And then we had a shared head in between, toilet, shower.
Sure.
So it can be kind of tight. But it's a ship. It's not the Hilton. It's a ship. So
just be prepared. Well, and I just want to kind of give people a context of it. That it's really about the mission of it.
Yes.
And even asking you. What inspired you to join and continue to go through these
what
ranks?
Keeps me here?
What was the inspiration for you to actually say, NOAA Corps for me? And then what does keep you here?
Well, I have an engineering degree. I'm a mechanical engineer by degree. I knew I didn't want to sit behind a computer my entire life and design things. I wanted to do something more exciting. And one of the biggest draws with the NOAA Corps is that you change assignments every 2 to 3 years. And I like variety. I don't really have the desire to be the expert in any one, small area.
Right.
Once I gain proficiency in something, I want to try something new. And that's something that the NOAA Corps definitely gives you. And they do that without having you change companies and worry about health benefits and retirement. I mean, I'm still progressing through this one company, if you will, and I still get to do a variety of things.
Right.
That's my biggest draw.
Sure. And you're passionate about the work.
Yes.
Yeah. Especially at this time point with the economy being where it is, are you seeing more of an increase of just people who wouldn't have thought of NOAA Corps before are now thinking of it?
I believe so. I've had quite a few inquiries from all different majors and all different. Yeah,
sure.
we've had a lot of inquiries.
To find out. Okay. And then last thing, do you get a clearance? With NOAA Corps, is it like a secret or top secret clearance that's required?
Yes. All officers have to be able to obtain and maintain a secret clearance.
Okay. All right. And depending on where you go, it may have to get higher if you have to serve in another kind of billet or capacity.
Right.
Holly, thank you so much for coming on Fed Access, and we really appreciate you.
Thank you.
We have to take a break, but when we return, you'll hear the second and final part of my interview with Ellen Hurst, Director of the National Technical Information Service. In this interview, I talked to Director Hurst about the Deaf Master File, the World News Connection, and other products and services NTIS provides. Stay tuned. You won't want to miss it. You're listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Hi, I'm Jim Fleisig. Please join me October 5th at noon for my monthly series, The Federal Executive Forum. This month's program will discuss the greening of government initiatives, progress and priorities in the federal government. The panel includes government leaders from GSA and EPA. Don't miss the Federal Executive Forum on Tuesday, October 5th at 12 noon right here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com.
Sponsored by CA Technologies, Cisco Systems, Autodesk, and DLT Solutions.
How long has that car been following behind you?
What about the guy that's always at the bus stop, no matter what time you walk by?
Then there's that chatty neighbor who always gets your mail and opens it?
Maybe it's more than just coincidence. Washington, D.C. has more spies than any other city in the world. Debrief with the experts at the International Spy Museum. Go online to halfpricedc.com to purchase your half-price ticket.
Access the largest collection of international spy gadgets, brush up on your counter-surveillance skills, and go undercover on your very own spy mission. Spy Museum.
What if I said you had the power to speak Chinese or to dream in French? What if you could even read in Italian? You'd be skeptical, right? What if I could prove it to you with a free demo CD-ROM from Rosetta Stone, one that unlocks your ability to learn any language on Earth? Introducing the all-new, more powerful Rosetta Stone, the only language learning program that literally awakens your natural ability. And for the first time ever, they're inviting you to experience their groundbreaking program, absolutely free, with a free demo CD-ROM. Call 1-800-600-6621 and request yours. Developed around the way you naturally think and learn, Rosetta Stone teaches you your new language with the tools you already have. And now you can experience it for free. Awaken your natural language learning ability today with a free demo CD-ROM from Rosetta Stone. Call 1-800-600-6621 and request yours. Rosetta Stone, your natural ability awakened. That's 1-800-600-6621.
Okay, people, let's settle in. We've got a lot of slides to get through on our server utilization strategy. Okay, now this is an interesting
slide. Well, you've been here before. Somewhere in your agency, someone came up with a plan for data center efficiency.
Well, if you look here at the third bullet point, this is...
Actually, what they came up with is a presentation deck. You know, with underlined sections, bullet points, few animations, and sound effects. What's missing, of course, is how the job will actually get done. Because when the federal CIO says data center efficiency is a top priority, you need more than a slideshow. You need results. That's where Dell Services comes in. We've got over 30 years of experience delivering comprehensive best-in-breed solutions. Whether that's virtualization, cloud computing, or business continuity, we're ready to listen, and we're ready to help you deliver. To learn more, go to Dell.com/deliver now.
Peter Gouldman from the Department of State commented during the panel discussion on identity-aware data loss prevention, how to manage and protect sensitive information.
A memorandum requesting all of the organizations in the federal government to take a hard look at what they're doing with information specifically focused in areas of personally identifiable information so that we can get a better handle on how much of it we should be keeping, where we should be keeping it, and what we should be doing to protect it.
To hear this show in its entirety, go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword CA.
How do you keep your infrastructure safe without limiting your people and productivity? CA Technologies lets you control every use of every IT asset by everyone who accesses your systems. Can you say yes to new capabilities? Can you enforce defense in detail, not just defense in depth? Can you empower your people while protecting your systems? With CA Technologies, you can. To learn how, visit ca.com/gov/value.
Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Last week, you heard my interesting interview with Ellen Hirsch, Director of the National Technical Information Service, about the agency and its work. Today, in the second and final part of the interview, I talked to Director Hirsch about the DEF Master File, the World News Connection, and other products and services NTIS provides. Do you see growth in terms of more positions coming online? I mean, you know, maybe this year, do you see more hiring in order to meet these challenges that you're facing?
Well, as you might imagine from the model we're on, we're extremely careful about resources in general. And I should have mentioned at the top, while we have a wide variety of positions, they're kind of all over the place, we are a relatively small agency. We have about 120 full-time government employees.
Okay.
And where we see openings coming in, say, the next year or two are very specific, specialized.
Okay.
types. So,
for instance,
IT always.
IT specialists, like a database,
particularly database, web, how to bring things to the web, how to host things on the web. We have great security people, but just in general, IT security is always a good play if you're looking for a government position. People who understand how to take information and make it more valuable, so those product management and outreach and education type of positions. And then to a lesser extent, but looking at where we think we're going to need resources and our patterns of natural retirement and things like that, we will also, I anticipate that over time we're going to need to refresh those folks that have those electronic library skill sets and backgrounds.
Okay. You know, you guys, I'm looking at your products and subscriptions right here. And the Deaf Master File. And
everybody loves
everybody
that
wants to know about the Deaf Master File because I think that's, talk to me about that. I think a lot of banks and other places may use
exactly
this file.
Exactly so.
But what's the Deaf Master File?
It's probably exactly what you think it is. It's a list of Social Security numbers of people who are dead.
Okay. Going back to when?
Oh gosh, you've stumped me.
Okay.
We've been working with the Social Security agency for years and years and years, certainly over a decade, maybe longer than that. But that's a good question. I'll have to get back
to you.
We'll
find out,
Now, you say, wow, who would use that? And you just touched on a couple of places. When you think about verifying if somebody is who they say they are, then one common identity fraud scenario is using a dead person's Social Security number. So certainly law enforcement agencies, financial institutions who have to grant credit of any kind, insurance companies. Then there's a whole different group of people who might not come to mind initially. But then if you think about people who are paying out benefits only as long as you're alive, so people who are paying out pensions or any kind of medical benefits or so forth, wanting to double check their records, are users of that information. So again, that's a very interesting example.
And this is becoming more and more important each and every day.
Yes. And in matter of fact, after 9/11, there was a congressional subcommittee that asked us to come and speak about the Deaf Master File and actually encouraged us to do more to make sure that the people who needed that information to verify identity had an easy way to get at it.
Okay.
So that was a real, you know, a real boost of confidence for us as an agency.
So anybody in the private sector, like you said, people who distribute money, people who loan out money, credit agencies.
It's institutions in this case.
Sure, institutions.
Right.
They can access this Deaf Master File.
Right,
and get
through a subscription.
Through a subscription. They got to pay for it.
Yeah.
It's not
because
free,
we're cost recovery only.
Exactly.
So.
And that's only fair. That's only fair. And with that, I also saw a couple other interesting things. The World News Connection.
Yes.
What's
very
that about?
Interesting. And we've been working with the Open Source Center for years and years and years. It used to be called the Broadcast FBIS, if you probably know. Obviously, they are gathering news information from around the world for internal use by analysts and so forth. They believe that it's important to both our understanding as citizens about what's going on in the world, but also important to the wider analyst community, whether it be academic or nonprofit or whatever, to have access to that information. So we've worked with them, again, for years and years and years. They're, in this case, the feed we get of the information. Our job is to go back to the original news source and negotiate copyright clearance and royalty.
Okay.
So that this information can legally, legitimately then be offered to the public. And then so, package it up and we make it available online, a very quick turnaround.
So a person can get a subscription to the World News
Connection. Yes.
And then they can see news from basically anywhere
and
around the world.
Fascinating.
Okay.
Fascinating.
And is this everything in print or is it video? I mean,
it's certainly in the past been heavily in print.
Okay.
It now does include obviously feeds coming off the internet. And we are working towards the what would we need to do to make increasingly video and audio. It turns out that the technology is not the issue there. It's the copyright clearance.
Okay.
There are many people who own copyright, for instance, to a picture that may be on a website own copyright.
Right.
And we, of course, are very careful about respecting copyright.
Now, for this connection right here, I mean, are you paying to access the copyright for those things? I mean, as a federal government?
In that case, this is an interesting, we share the subscription revenues on a pre-arranged, pre-negotiated basis with the news source holding the copyright.
Okay. And is a news connection, is this really mainly your subscribers? Are these media outlets? I mean, who are a lot of the people who are subscribing to this?
This is a good product that's an example of another interesting thing we do. So this is an example of a product that we offer through a partner in the private sector. And it's generally incorporated and aggregated into a larger news feed product. So this would be a file within a larger subscription. Now, who buys it? It is, in some cases, it's media outlets. But in most cases, it's not. It's in other institutions. It's universities. Okay. Again, there's a lot of analysts in the university community that we depend on in general for our better understanding of the world. Individual researchers, corporations, et cetera.
Ellen, thank you so much for coming on Fed Access. We're going to definitely have to have you back later on this year sometime.
Thank you.
It's been a pleasure.
You've been listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear it in its entirety on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch, Thursday afternoons at noon, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, WFED, your source for federal news now.